You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 15 April. We've got U.S. import-export price data due 2:30 our time. I'm Simon Brown coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Zimeli Mabanjwa from FNB Wealth and Investments. We got February mining output data, and it was strong, surging back over 50% increase in PGM output, but also PGM prices. I want to discuss those platinum group metals, any of the mining is looking attractive. Narina Fisser from ETFSA. They are listing an offshore ETF, actively managed. It will be listing later this morning. And then we're going to chat with the CEO of Better Bond. Continued rise in first-time buyers, but also rising demand for smaller and flats and townhouses. The question is, things have changed over the last month. Are they seeing any impact? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, Bloomberg, the entire Iran war sell-off has already been erased. S&P 500 back at February levels. And Business Day, Ramaphosa names political veteran Rudolf Meyer as next U.S. envoy. Morning markets, U.S. was green, S&P up 1.2%, NASDAQ 1.8% higher. The East is mostly green, Sydney's off 0.5%, Tokyo 0.5% higher, Hong Kong up 1%, and Tencent almost 2% up. Commodities mostly green, gold futures 4,852. Brent is the red, 95.23. Platinum, 2,134. Palladium, 1,599. The rand is 16.34. Bitcoin, 74,400. And top 40 opening call, green open, 255 points, or a little under 0.25% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Zimeli Mabanjwa, FNB Wealth and Investments. Zimeli, appreciate the early morning time. We had mining output data yesterday. It was February. We saw a massive surge. Production up 9.7%. PGMs, chrome, manganese, and gold, the big moves. But what struck me was mineral sales at constant prices up 58%. I think in all of the hype around gold, I suppose the oil price, to be honest, I'd kind of forgotten that PGMs had really done well year on year. That mid-year rally has largely held. Your thoughts on the sector? Is there opportunity? Are you bullish on PGM miners?
Morning, Simon. Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of us had forgotten about the PGMs, but they've been very strong. Obviously, the market has been very tight as far as the demand for platinum group metals, and there has been a structural deficit for a while now. So the prices did start picking up last year, and we're seeing these miners perform very well so far. And really, when we were at the lower end of the cycle, we did see some pullback in CapEx. We saw some pullback in production. We saw a lot of restructuring activity going on. So when the prices came back, it's good to see that we are now finally catching up from a production standpoint. And yes, I definitely think there is opportunity. We generally like the low-cost players, like your Valterra Platinums and your Northams, who for the most part were able to absorb a lot of the pressures during the down cycle. So now, with the up cycle, we expect there to be stronger margins, margin improvement, stronger cash flow generation, just based on their their low cost nature. But I definitely am also looking out for the other players like your Impalas and your Sibanyas, who have a mix of gold and platinum. So we also saw that gold performed really well, and obviously chromium being the byproduct of platinum as well. Strong production output there as well. So I think all positive all around, and I think there's definitely opportunity bar for the volatility that we're seeing in the market, prices up and down all the time.
Yeah, I take your point on volatility. And I think importantly, I mean, a lot of folks were like, EVs are going to kill the PGM space. I mean, to be clear, EVs might kill PGMs, but I mean, that is a very long-term play out. In the short to medium, I don't know, the next 1, 3, 5 years, we're still going to have a lot of need for PGMs. You talk about structural deficits.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there was the expectation that there would be a very strong uptake of of EVs, that isn't materializing. I think a lot of these targets are being pushed back. A lot of producers, car manufacturers are either pushing back the ramp up of EVs, or scaling back, or just stopping it altogether for now, because Clearly, ICE vehicles and hybrids are the more preferred we currently are. We are back at a structural deficit. Platinum, for the most part, at least in the medium term, should remain relatively resilient. As you said, I mean, the EV story is probably a longer term death, if I want to call it a death, but even then, I don't think it will be as pronounced as we initially thought, and it is playing out to be that, and obviously the platinum miners are benefiting.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll leave it there. That's Mbanjwa, FNB Wealth and Investments. Appreciate the early morning. That's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Are you seeing value in this sector? Zamela says absolutely preferred there, Valterra, Northam. But have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Nerina Fisser. She, of course, the director at ETFSA. Nerina, appreciate the early morning time. The ETFSA Oyster Global Balanced Prescient Actively Managed ETF. A bit of a mouthful. A lot of that, of course, is regulatory requirement. The short version, ETFSA listing your second ETF later this morning on the JSE. This one, all offshore.
Absolutely. Good morning, Simon, and good morning to all your listeners. Yes, indeed. Short name, Oyster, because the world is your oyster.
I have to be honest, Nerina, that took me a little bit of time. I was quite slow on that one, but carry on.
Indeed, yes. 100% offshore, not just in terms of the underlying exposure, but the bulk of the underlying investment will physically also be invested in offshore markets, which of course means it gives us access to a much broader range of ETFs than what we have available on the JSE, and it also allows us to participate in some of those very well-known, very deep and liquid, very low-cost ETFs offered by the likes of Vanguard and State Street, in addition to the iShares. And of course, we don't necessarily have easy access to many of those other ETF providers on the JSE, but through the Oyster actively managed ETF, you will therefore have access to investing in those ETFs as well.
So in essence, this will be an ETF of ETFs, and you and your team
exactly.
At ETFSA, because this is actively managed. And is this actively because there isn't an index? I mean, I can't imagine you're going to be sitting there, you know, trading 24/7.
Yes. No, you're spot on, Simon. That's exactly how it is. The listing requirements and the rules at the JSE dictate that unless there is an actual index that is being tracked by an ETF, it has to be classified as an actively managed ETF. But that does not mean that, as you say, we'll be sitting there trading at 24/7. It does allow us some flexibility in terms of our allocation around a strategic asset class benchmark. So this is a multi-asset portfolio. So yes, it will have equities in it. It will have bonds in it. It will have commodities in it, including the platinum that you've just been talking about now. But for example, our strategic benchmark is an 80-20 benchmark, 80% equities, 20% fixed interest. But at the launch today, you will find that there's only 15% in interest bearing, mostly because we feel that equities and commodities offer better investment opportunities at the moment than bonds, especially with the uncertainty around the direction of interest rates in the foreseeable future. And the 85% that is then allocated to growth assets, 75% of that will be in equities and 10% in physical commodities, being specifically gold and platinum.
And I like your point around that. It's 80-20, but there's some flexibility. And I imagine, you know, the flexibility is perhaps, not extreme. You're not going to go to sort of 100/0, but it does let you tweak that as you look out and think that things need a bit of tweaking.
Indeed. And Simon, of course, the other aspect of some flexibility is also that within each of these asset classes, we have the ability to move away a little bit from just the large benchmark sort of asset class indices. So, for example, under global equities, we would typically be thinking of an ACWI, an all-country world index, the MSCI.
Yeah.
Or within developed markets, it would be the MSCI World and MSCI Emerging Markets. But within that, we also allow ourselves some flexibility. So, you will see in this ETF, for example, that we will be including things like mid-cap US stocks in addition to maybe a NASDAQ or an S&P 500. Those we have readily available on the JSE, but we don't have an easy way to invest in the S&P 400, for example. Mm-hmm. You're going to see some AI infrastructure in there. In other words, not the mega-cap AI companies, but in the infrastructure that needs to be established in order to support the major AI rollout that we see. So, these are some of the flexibility, the small tweaks that we see. But I think for the investor, the beauty is a single ETF that you buy in rands on the JSE for the very low starting price of 10 rand a unit. Mm-hmm, so for a very, very small amount, one really is able to buy into this idea that the world is your oyster, and therefore you can invest in these global markets, in these global opportunity sets that up until now have not been readily available on the JSE.
Dividends, obviously, you will receive. Will you reinvest and pay out? And do you have a target term?
So in terms of the dividends, yes, we will be paying out, but we certainly don't expect a lot of dividends. That's not the major sort of, reason why one invests in global markets. But whatever is paid out will be, to the ETF fund will be paid to investors. In terms of TER, our management fee, 0.35%. There's, of course, then the additional cost that would come on top of that. We expect that the official TER, by the time we're allowed to publish it, will probably settle at around about half a percent, so 50 basis points is what we are targeting in terms of the TER.
Which tells me just how cheap those offshore ETFs are that are listed in New York. They have the 15 points. And it will be enabled in tax-free accounts. There's nothing I see here that says it can't go into tax-free.
Exactly. That's the other beauty of this. So for the investor who wants to add international expo via their tax-free account, yes. Because there are no performance fees in this ETF, it is absolutely allowed for tax-free investments. You know, Simon, this is a portfolio that we initially launched as one of the portfolios in our living annuity. And up until now, it's only been available to ETFSA living annuity members. And increasingly, we found that there are other investors that also need and want this type of investment, and which is why we decided to launch it as an actively managed ETF, which means you can invest it certainly in your tax-free account, but also in your discretionary portfolios, you know, whether it's a small nominal amount of, say, 300 Rand a month that you want to invest, or whether it's big, massive amounts that you invest, all and everything can be accommodated with the structure of the Oyster actively managed ETF.
We'll leave it there, Nerina Fisser, ETFSA. This is listing this morning, 9 o'clock. That's a couple of hours away. Code Oyster. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Stefan Pochita, he's CEO of Better Home Group Mortgage Origination and Better Bond. Stefan, appreciate the time. We saw Saab hold on rates in March. The hope had been for a cut. We also saw massive fuel price increases in April. It's early days for both, but the point is that we really are seeing home prices and home purchase activity increasing. Rates are well below pandemic peaks and people are out and buying.
Yeah, thanks, Simon, for the opportunity. We've definitely seen a very positive growth. If I can refer to the last quarter-on-quarter results, I mean, the home loan applications grew by 9.7%. And if we compare year-on-year, it grew by 6.1%. So definitely some positive momentum in the market. But I mean, with the current geopolitical risk, we can definitely see the dampening impact on the intake volumes currently.
I take your point. I mean, the rates may be less so because we're well off those pandemic highs, but the petrol price must weigh on the minds of potential home buyers.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a bit of a twofold as a result of the geopolitical challenges. You know, first of all, fuel costs, and then also on potential interest rate reductions. I think that's definitely top of mind of the current home buyer, and that definitely puts a damp on the current demand.
The one point from your latest survey you put out, first-time home buyers, and this is not a new trend, this has been happening for a couple of months now, they really are stepping up. We're seeing a lot more first-time buyer activity.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, there's always a correlation between lower interest rate environments. So we've seen first-time home buyers pick up. It makes up around about 38% of all home loan applications. That's from a level of around about 35% in 2023. And we've also seen the average bond value increasing to around about 1.3 million compared to the average of 1.7 million. So definitely a huge amount increase on the first-time home buyer segment.
The Western Cape, typically the leader here, but Pretoria continues to outdo Johannesburg. Maybe it's our potholes in Joburg, but that always fascinates me that Pretoria outside of Cape Town is the leader and Joburg kind of a bit of a lagger.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there's always a bit of a link. The disparities is clear in the municipal service delivery. So I think there's a direct correlation. But I mean, if we look at the region, obviously Cape Town is leading, but with an average bond value of around about 1.8 million. If we look at Pretoria, that's tracking at 1.4 million. Oh, wow. But then to your point, we see the gap widening between Pretoria and Johannesburg suburbs. And the last interesting fact, I mean, if we compare Cape Town to Johannesburg suburbs, Cape Town, the value has increased, house values has increased 18% over the last 2 years versus 4.4% for the Johannesburg suburbs. So big contrast.
Yeah, I take your point. Hey, but what about the banks? How are they? I mean, are they offering 100% bonds? Are they giving some sort of prime less to quality candidates?
Yeah, I think some very interesting data points from the banking industry. I think everyone has seen their latest results. So, so very good confidence in the South African banking system. And I think in terms of credit impairments, very low. And that obviously played an impact on them, reducing their entry levels for home ownership. And if I can look at the, probably one data point, if you look at the average deposit, it's reduced by 26% over the last 2 years. So definitely much lower hurdles to get finance from the banking environment.
Okay. New builds. In the note you put out, you referred to, we're seeing a lot of sort of smaller builds, sub 80 squares. I mean, you know, the days of a giant sprawling house and seems to be a bit on the out. There's a lot more for the smaller, perhaps the lock up and go as well.
Definitely seen a significant change in trend. I think if you look at the growth, so let's say but below the 80 square meter houses, I mean, that grew 16.2% year-on-year compared to the over 80 square meter bigger houses that only grew at 5.5%. Oh, wow. And if we look at the, call it below 80 square meters, normally townhouse, smaller housing, I mean, that makes up one third of the overall market now. And I think the last point is if you look at these below 80 square meter housing units, I mean, their value grew about 27% year on year. So definitely a big shift in the market to the more affordable units.
And you made the point in the note you wrote around broadly flat townhouses, a lot of new build demand in that space, the sort of lock up and go rather than that traditional freestanding house.
Yeah, so I think it's probably twofold. You know, I think obviously the buyer is signing up for almost a lifestyle lock up and go, a little bit improved security. But then definitely as a result of affordability. So probably driven by twofold, by security, lifestyle, and affordability.
Yeah, that lifestyle, and as you say, affordability always going to be top of mind. We leave it there. Stefan Pogita, CEO, Better Home Group Mortgage Origination, and Better Bond. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. I was chatting with Ian Anderson yesterday. He, of course, from Merchant West Investments. The local REIT sector was down over 12% in March. That after a very strong 2024 and 2025. We asked if there was value here. Over half said nope, it is still expensive, even after that March sell-off. A third said yes, very much so. The rest said selectively you want to pick and choose. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.